And it's actually the passage we had this morning, but you don't have a brownie or brownies reading it. You've got me reading it tonight, I'm afraid. So it's the same passage. It's a famous chapter, 1 Corinthians chapter 13. And Simon's going to focus on verse 8 onwards, but I'll read the whole chapter. And now I will show you the most excellent way. If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains but have not love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames but have not love, I gain nothing. Love is patient, love is kind. It does not envy, it does not boast. It is not proud, it is not rude, it is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered, it keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails, but where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part and we prophesy in part, but when perfection comes, the imperfect disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child, I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put childish ways behind me. Now we see but a poor reflection as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. And now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. Simon, can you come up for us? Thank you.
Good evening. Can you hear me? Well, it's lovely to be in Inverness, and we've never been to Scotland before, and so it's lovely to come to the Highlands, and thank you for making us feel very welcome. We really appreciate it. So we're here as part of BMS, which is the Baptist Missionary Society, and I'm supposed to do a little promo for there's some leaflets and things outside that you can look at if you like. And today, what I'd like to do, if it's okay, is share with you a little update about our life in Nepal, and then tell a few stories. And I'm not a preacher, I'm a computer teacher, so forgive me if it's not quite a sermon, but I'll try. Okay. So first of all, just a little update. Does this work? It does. This is KISC, Kathmandu International Study Center. And this is a school for children of mission workers. It's where Wendy and I taught up until 2014. It's where we got married. I taught ICT and Wendy taught RE, religious education. And it's a really fun, vibrant place with kids from about 20 different countries. And then after 2014, we took a period of time out and we went and trained with BMS at their college in Birmingham, before we returned to Nepal at the beginning of 2015. And Wendy was teaching here at the Nepal Baptist Bible College, and she was teaching English and then Introduction to the New Testament. And this is her with two of her students. They're in their traditional Nepali dress there. And Wendy also was supervising the BMS action team. And it's a program, a 10-month program for 17 to 23-year-olds that are interested in experiencing mission for the first time. So if you know anyone or you have any kids or anyone you know of 17 to 23, I would highly recommend this program to you guys. And so, yeah, Wendy and her action team worked here. This is Dean Mitra Preschool. I feel like my mic is wandering all over the place. And this is a preschool that's set up by a local church for migrant laborers who might otherwise have to bring their kids to the building site with them. So this is the graduation, and they're not smiling because it's a very serious event. Taking that graduation very, very seriously. And I joined an organization called Kiskequip, which is based out of that same school we were working with, but it's the Education Quality Improvement Program. And what that means is we work with various schools around the country in different roles, and our team is half Nepali and half foreigner, and our motto is to be living witnesses of Christ's love. And these are some of the different things that we do. So each member of staff has a specialist subject, and then we provide more general training for teachers and parents and school management committees, and provide different resources like libraries and scholarships and things like that. So I feel like this is going all over the place. What am I doing here? Maybe I'm not really pop star enough for this one. Let's try that.
The thing is, I feel bad. It took him about 10 minutes to put this on.
Take your glasses off for me a second. I got you.
So my specialist subject is ICT and how to use it effectively in the classroom. And this is a training we were involved with the local government. And it was about 40 degrees in this room, but everyone has to wear collars and look very smart. It was hot. So more recently, we've moved to a new district, a new place called Lomjung. And it's kind of like at the end of the road. Well, the road kind of stops before the mountains begin. And it's a beautiful place. And we've moved there so that we can be more close to the schools that we work with. And we've been involved with a couple of different projects while we've been there. One has been with World Vision, upgrading a classroom from, it looked like this before, and this was after. And also, we've been involved with setting up a computer lab with Microsoft in a village school that we can use for training and the school can use for teaching their kids. So there it is. So that's a short update. But as we come here and we do a home assignment, it seems to me that what people want to hear more are stories, and story of how our lives and the work of BMS has made a difference. So today I would like to share with you a few stories of different people that we've met in Nepal. So the first person I'd like to introduce you to is a lady called Milan. She's in the orange shirt there. And when we arrived in Nepal in early 2015, we moved in with Milan and her family. And she's a lovely Christian lady with two kids. And she has an estranged alcoholic husband who's caused a lot of problems for her and her family. He's not in the picture. And when we moved in, Milan was working two different jobs. She worked in a Christian social welfare agency by day, and then she'd come in for half an hour, turn around and go out and work in a hospital as a nurse by night. And a short time into our stay, the earthquake came. You may have heard about it. And being both a nurse and a Christian social worker, Milan left the next day with her team to an earthquake-affected area, and she joined a team from Bhutan, and they set up a medical camp. And she stayed there for a week, supporting many victims and
even there were many operations they were involved in as well. And our presence with Milan's family made just a small difference in that she was able to quit her night job and devote herself to the earthquake relief. She was able to leave her two kids with us as she traveled off, and we spent many nights praying together. And during our stay, she wasn't worried that her husband would come. Here's another story. The lady in the yellow on the end, she's called Maya. Maya was in her village near the epicenter when the earthquake hit, and her house fell, and she was partially buried in the rubble. In fact, she was dug out and airlifted with her three-year-old daughter to Pokhara, to the town where we were staying. And after being released from hospital, she had nowhere to go and needed somewhere to stay. So she ended up sending her daughter to a local preschool, which is run by YWAM, which is Youth with a Mission. And there she met Samjana, which is the next lady along. And she's a Christian lady. And before Maya met Samjana, she'd never heard of the church or Christ. And Wendy knows Samjana from their time working together back in 2008. And so with some money given to us by a friend in the UK, and with the support of Samjana and her husband and the local church, this lady and her child were provided a room with the rent paid for 6 months and some cooking equipment and other bed and other household goods and somewhere to stay. This is my friend Batali, and her sister Yom Kumari is in the background there. And Wendy first saw these girls on a building site. Their mum was carrying bricks and they were sort of playing in the sand in the corner. And Wendy felt prompted that she should help, but not knowing the family, she didn't know what would be appropriate. So she prayed for the situation and asked God for ideas of what she could do or how we could help. And the next morning, we went to our Nepali church, which is this. It's a small cinder block building with a tin roof and a congregation of about 30 people. And sitting there in a town of 15,000 people was these two girls and their mum. And we'd never seen them there before. So Wendy introduced herself to the mum and asked how we could help. And we learned that the church was already supporting them as a family with a little bit of money and some uniform and some books for school. And we got to know the family too, and we offered some after-school tutoring for the girls and a few gifts. And we just had a great time. We taught the girls how to pray, how to color, how to sound out words, how to wash your hands before you eat. We just had a lovely time together. And this idea of tutoring kids first started when we were in Kathmandu. The pastor and his wife had three daughters and seven other kids that they looked after. In fact, I think we introduced you to some of these kids in the morning service today. And these kids had been street children until a German guy came along and he tried to start a children's home for them. But he was unable to really do that himself, so he ended up back in Germany and the kids ended up with the pastor, who he supports from a distance. And we got involved with this family and we started tutoring the kids after school. And we learned more about them each week as they come to our house. And each kid has their own story. Some are orphans, or their parent might be in prison, or rejected by their family. And some come from very abusive situations. But we really enjoyed tutoring these kids and being part of their lives. It's also a great joy for us. And we always liked, you know, when they bring home their report cards and we could see how well they were doing. So we really enjoyed that. This kid's Unique. That's his name. And he has a sister called Simple. And Unique's a boy from the preschool that Wendy was working in. And he was quite a misbehaved young man. And it took a while to realize that that's because he was suffering from profound hearing loss. And he'd never learned to communicate through speech, so he'd communicate through just hitting or pulling or just making himself known. And his mum hadn't taken Unique to an ear doctor for many years because she went to a Hindu priest who told her that it'll be fine, he'll learn to speak on his own before adolescence. And as Wendy got to know the mom and got to know the family, she was able to convince her to visit a hearing clinic. And after a very long process, we were able to see Unique try on his hearing aids for the first time. And he loved them, and he started immediately hearing sounds, and then he was working out where they came from or who they came from. And Unique's mom was able to meet parents with kids in similar situations, and yeah, they encouraged her to enroll Unique in speech and language therapy. So I think the first thing that I notice in that each of these situations is that we find the church already at work. Milan works for a charity supported by the local churches. Maya was supported by the local church. Butterly and her sister were being supported by the church, as were the kids in Kathmandu. Unique went to a free preschool run by the church. And it's not that we come from the West and make something happen, but in every case, just partner with existing ministry. And I'm a big fan of the church, the local church and the global church. It's not perfect, but it does a lot of good, as I'm sure the church does here. But the second point that I'd really like to make is that a good story to me ends at a certain point. It's when something's happened, we walk away from it, we tie up the story with a pretty bow and we put a picture on the screen behind us and we call it a happy ending. But life is not that simple, and I don't want to stand here and pretend that it is. Most earthquake victims are still in temporary housing. Those that lost their legs or had amputations are still lame. Those that were paralyzed are still paralyzed. And in fact, last time we saw Milan, her daughter had dropped out of college, and she hadn't managed to fill that room we were renting. In fact, her finances were quite tight. And her family was pressuring her to take back her husband, despite his abusive tendencies. The truth is, we're not in contact with Maya anymore. Butterly's family have recently moved from a two-room rented building to a one-room sort of mud shack. They've got no electricity, no running water. We met the dad, and he's alcoholic, he's a drunk, and he spends much of the money that the mum works 6.5 days a week, 12 hours a day, carrying bricks to earn. Butterly's got a slightly older brother and sister. They've both dropped out of school. Her older sister got married at 14 and had her first kid at 15. And in all honesty, their life is very complicated, and it doesn't have a lot of prospects. And we've moved house in the village, and it's unlikely that we will be able to continue tutoring the girls because the commute will be too long. And of our kids from the church in Kathmandu, the truth is that 4 remain with the pastor. They've managed to move out of Kathmandu to a big house and church there. But amongst the others, Kumar's dad got out of prison and took him back. His dad had become a Christian through the Nepal Prison Fellowship. We don't see Kumar anymore, but we just pray he's doing well because he was always one of the brightest and hardest working. Asa's mom got remarried and came for her, and it's unlikely she'll be able to continue her schooling. She didn't want to leave, but she did, and we pray she's doing well. Upsara and Uksa are back with their 4 siblings in a one-room shack at the bottom of the Christian family's garden. It's not a lot better than the street, but just a little. Prasant's dad came back for him. We saw him recently. He's dropped out of school, and he's working on a building site. Our friend Unique has made really good progress with his speech and language therapy. We haven't seen him in a while. We haven't been able to since we left Kathmandu. But we heard that his dad is applying to work in the Middle East as a migrant laborer. And he's doing that because he knew that there's going to be a lot of costs to to support his son. His son will need special schooling, and the speech and language therapy isn't free. And it saddens us to think that in some way that we influence that, like our actions may cause Unique to have his father around a lot less. And we work with a lot of schools. And as we walk away from trainings, we normally feel really buoyed that we've imparted something really great and that will make a huge difference. And when we come back, we often find out that it hasn't. This beautiful picture of a classroom that I showed you, it doesn't show you the disorganization behind it, or that half of the special teaching and ICT supplies that we went to Kathmandu to buy disappeared somewhere between the office and the school. So it looks nice from that one angle, but in reality, it was supposed to be more than this. And I'm not sharing this just to make you depressed on a Sunday evening, although it might sound like it, but I'm sharing it just because I want to point out, and because I think we know that the truth and the reality of life is more complex than a simple story with a happy ending and a pretty picture. In reality, we know that people and organizations need continuous support. And I'm sure that you can think of people in your own life who have supported you throughout your whole life, or who you will have to continue to support throughout their lives. And it can take a lot of effort just to do a little thing. We watched that Star Wars Rogue One movie, and we were struck by just how much effort, how much coordinated and sacrificial effort it took to get the plans for the Death Star, and all with no guarantee that it would end happily. And we do not always see happy endings, and we can't always know what the result of our actions will be. But what we are called to do is to do everything in love as we were first loved. And love is the currency that matters. And as Mother Teresa says, not all of us can do great things, but we can do small things with great love. Or as the Apostle Paul wrote in Corinthians, love never fails, but where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. Or we could say, where there are development projects and outreach events, teacher trainings and school improvement plans, these things will pass away. For we know in part and we prophesy in part. But when completeness comes, what is in part disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me. For now we see only a reflection as in a mirror. Then we will see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. And now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. And sometimes our part in a story is only a fraction of a bigger picture. And as we look at something over time, we learn there's much more to it than we initially thought. And sometimes I reflect on schooling in Nepal, and I think of some of the schools that I go to, and I kind of think, oh, they never change. But if I reflect back 50 years ago, there were next to no schools at all. There were hardly any roads. The literacy rate has doubled in the last 30 years, and life expectancies doubled in the last 50, from only 35 in 1960 to 69 by 2014. And so finally, I'm thankful that there is one who knows all of our stories, that God knows and cares about all of our stories, the small ones and the larger overarching ones. And I'm grateful that whatever point we're at in our stories or in the stories of others, that he loves us and that we know that the ultimate story is worked out for overall good. So my encouragement today to us all is to love, whether you're finding happy endings or just more challenging chapters ahead.